Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mental Health Much, the podcast that talks about everything queer and mental health. And we are really fast advancing in our season on loneliness as we are discussing the last two chapters today. But it won't be the last two episodes because we will record in person for our final episodes that are going to talk about some solutions. But today we're still talking about the chapters in the book. So the first episode today is going to be on chapter 9 about sex and loneliness. And next episode is going to be the last chapter of the book. It's going to be on phones, dating apps, and social media. But before we start, let's say hello to Dale and Mackenzie. Hello, Dale.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
I'm very good. Hello, Mackenzie.
Hi, Vincent.
Thank you so much for being with me through this whole thing. It's very funny that for us, we're kind of at the end of something where in real life, as we're recording this, the second episode of the season just aired. So there's a bit of a delay there, but it's all good. Also, thank you for the responses we've had so far for the beginning of the season 4. So again, it's only just a couple episodes that were out for a very short period of time, but so far the feedback is really positive. So I'm excited about this. And of course, there's so little time that elapsed that we have not received a new review on Apple Podcasts. But I discovered that on Spotify, I am one person away from having 20 reviews. So thank you to the 19 people who gave me a review, including the one person who gave me 4-star instead of 5. Because, you know, if that's how you feel, then that's how you feel. And 4-star is still plenty of stars.
They thought it was good, but just not that good, you know?
Yeah, they didn't get to the later episodes.
Yeah, you were not on the seasons yet. Yeah. Yeah, to be fair, my podcast is, I'm greatly appreciative of a 4-star review. Some podcasts have a lot more production value than mine. So give the 5-star to people who have money, as per usual.
Right.
Anyway, let's start with discussing chapter 9. It's a whole chapter about sex in the context of loneliness. As per usual, you can go on my website or in the notes of this episode to read along with us. It's been kind of fun, too, that I've seen that normally nobody visits my websites because it's just like normally my information for my private practice. So it's not a high volume of people going on it. But there is at least like a handful of people who are reading along with us. So that's very exciting. So in this chapter, at first, I discussed the role that sex takes in our lives. And then I discussed the concept of pillow talk and also something that I hear a lot, falling in love while on vacation. And then I finish by discussing the reality that it's not always easy for everyone to have access to sex that easily in the gay scene. So that's an overview of the chapter. What did you two think about that chapter on sex?
This chapter and the next chapter following are really important topics. And I know that obviously sex gets mentioned a lot in the queer community, but I think there also really is a need to like discuss like your intentions and certain emotional needs surrounding sex. And I think that that needs to be talked about more and how that all relates to either resolving loneliness or sometimes amplifying it too. So I think these were some really great topics.
Mm-hmm. In a way though, I purposefully put them at the end of the book because I feel like it's always about sex and it's always about phones and dating apps. And I wanted to make a lot of space for a lot of other things before discussing those two topics that are maybe in my head a little bit more obvious. What about you, Mackenzie?
Yeah, I agree. In terms of like these two topics, like putting them together, like I kind of noticed that like both of them had kind of like a duality to them, like a kind of like two sides of a coin situation where both sex and social media can be beneficial to helping loneliness, but also like the opposite, like it can totally put you in the other direction. So yeah, I'm looking forward to exploring those. And especially with sex, like I think it's interesting because sex with the gay community specifically kind of evolved with it because the gay community arose out of a need for like, you know, one's own community of people whose sexuality is not the same or doesn't coincide with societal norms. So it's interesting how sex has kind of become a part of that. And I know we'll talk a bit about it, but yeah, the like links between being sex and social.
Mm-hmm. And on the other hand though, I really hate when homosexuality is reduced only to like the people that we have sex with. Although that's not what you're trying to say at all, Mackenzie, I know. But often it's like almost something that people are trying to say to be like, oh, I'm not homophobic. I don't care who you have sex with. But like, it's almost like I don't see colors. I cannot be racist. I don't see colors. Where like, I feel like homosexuality and obviously, I mean, I'm a white person, but you know, race and ethnicity is much larger than just the skin color and much larger than just the people who we have sex with.
Yeah, the queer experience, sex is a really important part of it, but there is just so much of it involved, as I'm sure the listeners who have read all the previous chapters have known by now. There's a collection of knowledge. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to talking more about it this chapter. I think you've made a lot of good points. I mean, if we just start at the beginning of the chapter to talk about the co-facilitator, Alejandro.
Our protagonist.
I'm really hoping for a happy ending in the, for everyone. But, you know, I think it's so important here where he brings up a point where the novelty of meeting someone is just so exciting. And I guess that like dopamine hit, it feels so good, even though it's for a short amount of time. And then unfortunately, that comes at the cost of like not taking care of some of his longer term friendships. And a friend of his gets annoyed saying that he doesn't have time for him, but he has all the energy for strangers. I thought that was like such a important point to make of how, you know, I think the excitement of the potential gives us the energy required, even though afterwards it could leave us even lonelier.
Mm-hmm. And that is so common that like people like, oh, I don't have the energy to see my friends or to do something socials, but I have the energy to somehow get fucked by a stranger. And like, I've been that person, like a lot of people I know have been this person where somewhat it's less energy to have sex than to socialize.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that can kind of fall into the realm of like addictive behavior, right? Because I feel like you're bypassing connections that might be more nourishing in the long term in order to have like a short term gain, which is like, you know, that rush of dopamine that comes with sex. But, you know, that's not to discount all sexual connections. I liked when in the chapter you discussed how sex can be kind of a way to like break the ice with other people. Mm-hmm. And like, I have found that's kind of how I use sex sometimes as a way to like establish a connection with people and kind of like gauge whether or not I could like see a future with them is by having sex. And I think it's kind of like how like dogs sniff each other's butts. You just kind of like get to know a person in this context and then, you know, based on that, decide if you want to continue a relationship with them. Like both my partners I have met through like originally it was just like a, you know, one-time hookup, but we just kind of kept seeing each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like what we talked about in actually the episode that just came out. I think the second episode, that sometimes it's unclear within gay men, like, oh, is this a date or is this a friendship? And like one way to take that out of the way is like, oh, we've already had sex a few times. It's now we're no longer interested in having sex with each other. So it's very clear that this is just a friendship now. But of course, that limits social interaction and making friends for a lot of people who don't like hooking up or don't want that kind of sex. Or maybe, again, there's a whole part about this later in the chapter, but just don't have the same sexual attraction as other people.
I mean, I've definitely fallen in the trap of a friend of mine. We just so naturally fell into just this like comfortable friendship. And it wasn't even like a defined conversation that we had to have. It was just like, it was just so unspoken. And then after, and he was one of the first like queer friends I made. And then I think I kind of just maybe assumed that it would happen that way, like with other friendships. Oh. And then, you know, sometimes like they would just ask like, is this like a friend thing? And you're like, oh, I thought like, didn't we just assume it was, or we have to have that conversation. Yeah. Humans, we're not mind readers. Mm-hmm. And we can think we understand body language. We can think we understand tone, inflection. We think we understand words, but like sometimes we need to say it out loud.
Yeah. When I was younger, I was in a pretty toxic relationship and I had a gay best friend as well. And my toxic boyfriend was super jealous, saying like, all this person wants is to have sex with you. And I was like defending my gay best friend over and over again and be like, no, this friendship is really important for me. And then my toxic relationship ended in a very disastrous way. And then I saw my best friend like the day after or 2 days after. And I had not even been single for 48 hours. And I was like talking about this breakup. And then this friend tried to have sex with me. And I left. And it was really awful that I kind of lost my partner, which I really don't regret losing this relationship. But that all along he had been quote unquote right to say that I should like not trust my friend, and that I've also lost a friendship. So I don't know why I'm telling this really sad anecdote about my life. But sex does complicate stuff in terms of loneliness and relationship in the gay world.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry that happened. That sucks. But yeah, it's hard when it intermingles with like friendships. Like I remember like one of my closest friends, we started off getting to know each other by like we hooked up once and like went on a few dates, but then like we kept hanging out. And then one time I like went in to like go for a kiss and he was just kind of like, I think we're just like better off friends. And I was like, okay, cool. Like I would have appreciated to know this like sooner before I went in for a kiss. But yeah, like now we're still like really close friends and I'm all the gladder that we're not like dating. But it's weird how those lines can get crossed or blurred when, especially in the gay community. And yeah.
And that's a thing I hear so often from like people I work with and friends, is like, oh, how do I tell this person that I would rather stay friend? And it's really a thing that a lot of people have a hard time navigating in the gay community because those lines are so blurred all the time.
This conversation reminds me of an SNL sketch where the main character is like, yeah, it's like great to have like queer best friends, but it could get complicated. Sometimes you just need straight male friend. And it's like, you don't have to talk about your feelings and emotions. You don't have to worry about accidentally, you know, hooking up or, you know, dating. It's just, you play video games and you drink beer. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I was like, oh, okay. Like there's so much truth to that. And in some ways I feel like my straight male friendships are a tad less complicated. We still have like in-depth conversations, but there is like, I know it's not going past a friendship.
I guess some people would say that depends on which straight men you hang out with.
The most non-toxic, nerdy, like like such nerds. All my friends are nerds, and I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
I love that.
Yeah, I also like appreciated in the chapter. So I underlined this sentence because it rang true to me, and I'll just read it. People can have sex to prove something to themselves, in brackets, that they are attractive enough, that they're still young enough, that they can be as fun and spontaneous as their dodgeball teammates, and that they can be sexually accomplished as their white friends. I was like, oh, like this is so varied and yet like can ring true to so many people on any level, you know? And I was thinking about like the reasons why I have sex. And I feel like I can trace it back to like a moment like a few years ago when I was like, I'm not going to be young forever. And I'm, you know, this youth is fleeting. So I'm going to enjoy it while I can. And I'm going to try to have as much sex as I can. And like, I feel like that kind of like put me on a path to like a very like sexually active lifestyle that otherwise I probably would not have had. Cause I feel like most of my 20s, I like forewent a lot of sex. Like I only had it with like romantic partners. But then like, yeah, I realized that I didn't have to be in a romantic relationship with the people that I had sex with. So yeah, it just opened a whole new world for me.
Yeah. But on like just at the opposite spectrum of that, I always repeat to people, if you need to take a break from sex, don't worry. Sex is still going to be there when you want to stop taking a break. Like sex is not going anywhere in the gay community. And older gay men have a lot of sex if that's what they want to do.
This is true. And thank you. Appreciate that.
I mean, like Mackenzie, I thought this was like a really important paragraph here as well. I mean, like even on a personal level, it's like I've done it before where like forget even the act of sex. It's like the validation or the thought that someone might even possibly want to is like very satisfying. And it's like, okay, that's proved enough. You know, in my early 20s, I spent a lot of time like beating myself up about my own appearance and my confidence and things like that. So sometimes when, you know, you might be accused of being a tease, but whatever, it's like just the thought of knowing that someone might possibly want to, it's like, oh, I mean, that might be a little toxic, but I'm like, okay, it's nice to know.
Yeah. But that also accounts to why there's some flaky people on dating apps. Like to a certain degree, because some people are actually quote unquote like addicted to that validation and they're not going to have sex, but they're going to sort of like put themselves out there until they could have sex and then not show up, which people on the other side who are not doing that can get quite frustrated. Because on dating apps, I could go and, you know, arrange for sex plans with a lot of people in one evening and get all that like quick validation. And then there's just not enough time or energy to follow up with everyone.
Yeah.
I should mention that I'm not making a bunch of plans and canceling on people. It's just nice to have compliments.
Yeah, it's like this slightly larger version of just like getting a match on Tinder, for example.
Yeah.
I also think that kind of speaks to something we had discussed in a prior episode, which is like the idea that like the anticipation of something can be just as like enticing or rewarding as the thing itself. And I feel that for me, even like sometimes when I'm thinking about sex and looking for sex, sometimes like just the act of seeking in itself is the exciting part. And like, I will know full well that I'm not intending on doing anything, but like, I will still like, I don't know, put myself out there and go out like thinking that I'll do it. And that, yeah, sometimes I'm just like, I'll just like get enough like pleasure from just the attention or yeah, like Dale said, like just validation of feeling desired, I guess.
Yeah, like, I still got it.
Yeah.
Regardless of age.
Exactly.
Even though we're all in our early 20s.
Oh my God, I don't want to be in my early 20s anymore, but thank you.
No. But I mean, just to go off like what Mackenzie was saying, and this kind of also, it came out of our conversation in our procrastination episode. One thing I do, and this also relates to the future topic, but one thing I've done is I've turned off all notifications for all dating and social apps. And then the other thing I do is I do not check those apps before 1 p.m. I don't know why I just chose that arbitrary time, but I'm like, you know, I kind of just don't want to ruin my day or not ruin my day, but I kind of just would think it's better for me to start my day with myself and whatever, you know, chore I need to do in that morning.
Wow. So not just dating apps, like all social media, you don't look before 1 p.m.
I mean, like, that I've messaged you before 1 p.m. on Instagram before. Instagram is hard, but mostly other apps like Facebook, Snapchat. I don't know what other apps I'm probably not a lot. I'm not on TikTok, any of those.
I love that. I think that's a good boundary to have set for yourself.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. So the part that you were talking about is sort of like in this chapter, the subtitle of like the role of sex. And yeah, it feels like you said, Mackenzie, that in this very short paragraph, I like drop a lot of information, which is maybe poor writing. But one of the things that I talk in that I wanted us to mention for a little bit is people who have sex because it's not allowed and they like things that are not allowed. I think this is quite an interesting topic, and I see that a lot. Like, there's so many open relationships in the gay culture, but often there are still a few rules, and then people get really turned on by breaking those tiny rules that are technically not that sexual, but that as soon as something is not allowed, then it becomes almost like an obsession to do it or to break that rule because we feel limited.
Yes, 100%. And like, that probably speaks to a lot of like fetishes that are out there. Like, we are interested in things that are taboo. And a lot of the time, yeah, that can end up damaging relationships because cheating on people is considered taboo. There was a part of my life when I was enticed by this idea of like having sex outside of a monogamous relationship. But then, I don't know, I think the outcome was not worth the reward, like, if that makes sense. Like, it just turned out to make me feel more guilty than I got any pleasure from it. So yeah, that's when I started to explore more open forms of communication, being more honest in my relationships. And I'm all the happier for it. And I've found ways to like incorporate that in my relationships in terms of like being honest with partners and having partners who are actually want to hear about, you know, the things that I'm doing, people that I'm seeing and stuff like that.
Yeah. On the topic of taboo, I have friends who are in the kink scene and they've talked about how they were always so like nervous to share kinks and stuff in their dating life. But when they found communities that like shared it, how like freeing that was and how it kind of also lessened their loneliness. And they're like, oh my God, I'm, you know, I can sort of explore this. There's not something wrong with me. I'm in like a very safe environment. And yeah, it was like really freeing for them.
Mm-hmm. There's a part in the book, I really do not remember where, but when I talk about like, sometimes gay men are afraid of commitment, like romantic commitment, because they are afraid of the rules that this will put on their sexuality, because they're part of their sexuality that they want to keep private or that they want to keep just for themselves. And then in a relationship, they would not be ready to talk about that part. And I find this true, even people who are well into the kink and fetish community, that there would still be some parts of their sexuality that they want to keep private and that they have more trouble talking about, and that this does, you know, play a role in, do I stay single? Because if I'm single, then I don't owe anything to anyone and I can have the sexual behaviors that I want to have when I want to have them, and I don't owe anything to my partner or partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do talk about that, I think, in relation to this section. But because I remember thinking, like, while I'm not single, I do have partners, but these partners also have other partners of their own that they live with. And so I feel like for me, that kind of like lessens the burden in a way. Mm-hmm. I still feel like that it's kind of like a blessing for me in the sense that I appreciate the freedom that I have of not having to live with my romantic partner, nor do I have the pressure of that happening because they both have partners of their own. So yeah, I don't know. I do find that kind of liberating that like it's not something that I'll have to deal with. But at the same time, like, I kind of feel sad because if ever I would want to have like a partner that I could live with, like, they would not be the one.
Right. It's not them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of tough trade off. Well, for you also, it's attached to people, but even in the abstract, it's a trade off that people could understand in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. I also wanted to bring up the last paragraph before we move on to pillow talk. So the last paragraph of this section talks about the ways that we can be more mindful when having sex. And yeah, I just thought that was like really important because I feel like sometimes a lot of people, myself included, like aren't mindful when they have sex and they kind of just like go through the motions. So yeah, that's something that I've been trying to like bring more intention to in my life.
How have you been doing that?
So I think the main way that I've been doing it is finding ways that I can incorporate sexuality with being social and having social connections. And like, I think the main way is that like, I feel like I've found like community in the gay scene, in the specific subsection of the gay scene that is very like sexually active. And so, you know, these people come together, and I think like sex is kind of like the thing that brings us together, but then like the relationships that come out of it aren't necessarily sexual. Like they can develop into like friendships or romantic relationships beyond that. I just feel like I, like in the last year, I've met so many people who have become friends from these events and social circles that I wouldn't have met otherwise. And yeah, I just think it's a beautiful thing to have.
Yeah. I don't think there's a bad in itself reason for having sex, but there are like bad reasons for having sex in certain contexts. Like if I'm having sex for the wrong reason, maybe it's the right reason on Tuesday and it's the wrong reason on Friday. And it's the exact same behavior that I would have had. Mm-hmm. So even within ourselves, there can be right or wrong at that particular time. But if sometimes I want to have sex just to prove to myself that I'm still young and sexy, or that I want to have something to talk about with my dodgeball colleagues, it's not the end of the world. If it makes me feel awful after and I try a few different things and it always makes me feel awful, then I can be more mindful and ask myself, like, why is it that I'm doing what I'm doing and how can I make it better? But there are no technically extremely bad reasons to have sex. You just need to own it and make sure it makes sense to you.
So just circling back to just before the end of the chapter, just before pillow talk, I do want to talk about this section where Sanjay and Colin, they share the fact that even though they're not really seeking that intimacy, how sex culture can come into it. And I'm definitely guilty of this, like meeting some great people and it's established that we're going to be friends, but I don't prioritize that relationship in regards to like potentially maybe like a dating potential or more established friendships. And it's difficult. You only have so much, even though I consider myself more of an extroverted person, you still have only so much social an emotional capital that you can expend. And then, you know, it's difficult juggling priorities. I definitely felt for them in their fictional characters, but I've grown a little emotionally attached to a lot to some of them. But, you know, I definitely felt for them. And I saw a lot of like past behaviors of my own and being on both ends of that reflected in this section for sure.
Yeah. Quick note that it's funny that in the intro of the podcast and even in the book, like we spend so much time with the characters that I'm really glad that now you know their name and you feel attached to them and you know them. While like on this podcast, we never talk about the characters or almost never. So people who are just listening to this are missing out on all these amazing people who don't exist.
Go read the chapters, everyone. Pause right now. Go read all the chapters.
Go read them. Yeah.
But yeah, these are two people for whom sex is less important, and it still comes in the way of them making meaningful relationships and friendship, because for other people in their life, sex is important. And Sanjay says, like, I'm in a bar and I just say hello to someone and they sort of like look at me as if I'm good enough for having sex or not. And if I'm not, then they're not going to talk to me. And Sanjay, this character, is like at the edge of asexual and he doesn't want to have sex with these people he meets in a bar, and he's still judged in like a sexual way through a sexual lens when approaching strangers.
I mean, the queer community like will band together to protect the community from external forces, but internally there is a lot of cracks. Like your sexual capital is like, it's so hard for some people to relate sometimes with, who potentially maybe have not struggled with people being attracted to them or are conventionally attractive. In some previous chapters, you've talked about Nick and how much he struggled, and then Tan. You know, it's definitely an important consideration as well. Like, I guess the word I'd use there is like privilege, pretty privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something else than just pretty. Of course, like basic attractiveness gives sexual capita, but I've worked with a lot of people, and just like the pretty factor or the look factor is not quite enough to determine if somebody's going to have a lot of sex or not. There's like other qualities that a person have to their sexual capita. But of course, basic look and like size is an important factor.
Yeah. And it sucks. Like when you meet someone and, I mean, it's impossible to be attracted to everybody, but like, it sucks when like in terms of personality, they're kind of what you're looking for. And like, you have a really good connection, but like, you don't feel that physical attraction. You don't know if it will come later on. I mean, sure, it could develop, but you know, it's kind of, I've kind of been sad about that before. And I'm like, in general, this person's what I'm looking for, but I'm just not like feeling the attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like goes back to what I was saying earlier about like having sex as an icebreaker, because I think like for me, like having a like good sexual chemistry is like, and I'm gonna be logical here, it's a necessary but not sufficient condition to a good relationship, in the sense that like, it's necessary for me to have it, but it's not the only thing that will make a good relationship, right? If that makes sense. Like, there's going to be more, but yeah, I think like to have a relationship with someone for me means like having sex with them. But yeah, like Dale said, I think that means that I have, you know, discounted people who probably might have been good partners for me in other ways. But yeah, just because I value sex, it's like, will never happen.
Yeah. And there are people for whom sexuality is not that important, and they can totally be in a relationship with someone that they don't have great sex with, and that's fine with them. I think this is kind of a personal choice, and we cannot make it for people. But there is sort of a taboo to be like, oh yeah, with my partner, we don't have sex and we're both happy with it.
You know, obviously you can't be attracted to everyone, but it's worth analyzing where your attractions come from. Are they based off like stereotypes? Are they based off just kind of what you've seen in media. And once I like sat down and I really thought about it, like there was unlearning I had to do, and it's been great, like opening myself up to dating more types of people previously, whereas I was had more of like blinders on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's always in between, right? Of course, respect yourself, but also
yeah.
Look at where your barriers are and push yourself a little bit. Maybe not jump off the deep end, but like at least a little bit to try to extend that quote unquote sexual preference.
Yeah, because you just hear be like, oh, it's just what I like. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. Fair, but why is it the only thing you like? I've challenged other people before. Some people are just, you know, whatever. They're not interested in having a conversation about it, but some people are open to it. And, you know, it's led to some really good conversations.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important to like question your desires. And yeah, I find myself doing that more and more too. And I feel all the better for it because I feel less judgmental when I do it, both about others and about myself. And I think, yeah, it's brought me more joy, like just trying to like open up that spectrum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I talk about it a little bit in the writing, but for people who are on like the lower sex capita, who feel like they don't have as much sex as they want, or sex does not come as easy to them as they perceive it happens to other people, I find that there's one of two reactions. Like the first one is that they kind of become obsessed with sex and they spend all of their time online to try to have sex. So it's funny because I've talked with people who feel like they never have sex and that's really hard for them to have sex. But then they have like one or two partners a day, but they still feel like they're working so hard for these partners where like some of their friend would just like unlock their door and have, you know, a bunch of strangers coming in to fuck them. So they kind of become obsessed with it. Or the other part is what Colin, the fictional character, is doing and just be like, oh, it's too hard to get. It hurts too much, the rejection. So just sort of like block it off completely from their life. And that's hard too, because it is a little bit everywhere in the gay scene. And if you just put this fake wall between yourself and sexuality, it does prevent a lot of opportunities in the gay scene.
Yeah, 100%.
So we skipped ahead and talked about when sex is not easy to get. And the last thing to talk about, at least that I've written about sexuality and loneliness, is this whole concept of pillow talk, which is like several concepts at the same time a little bit, which one of them is like with a romantic partner or a sexual partner, you get to like have company without having to be ultra social. There's just like someone else who's there with you. And then the concept of pillow talk per se is one that I've been guilty of doing when I was younger. And I hear a lot of people do sort of like have sex with someone for the first time and then it clicks and then you just info dump or even like trauma dump or trauma bonding with them. And you say all of those deepest things while you're like covered in each other, you know, bodily fluid. And then you have this sort of like sense of such a deep connection and such deep intimacy. But eventually you realize that this is not what intimacy is. Yes, it is an intimate moment, but it is like such an artificial moment. And it sets the bar like so high for other relationships, but it feels so good in a way. And most queer people I know have had this experience of like that super intimate moment after a hookup, like just saying all of those things that I've like quote unquote never told anyone before. And then like the harsh reality is that these people do not become, or I mean, it may happen a handful of times, but most of the times these people do not become romantic partner. And it's like this weird pillow talk. I'm fascinated about like pillow talk in the gay world. If I had not written about loneliness, I would have written a book about the concept of pillow talk in the gay world. The number of times this is reported to me, I find it really fascinating.
That's so interesting and very specific, and I love it. honestly, I had never really like given it much thought until you explore it in this chapter, but it really like resonated with me. And as you mentioned, like, I'm totally guilty of this myself. And I think it has something to do with like the feeling of vulnerability that comes with sex, mm-hmm. and just having had sex with someone, and then kind of like continuing that with like emotional vulnerability, right? And disclosing a lot that you may not disclose with other people. And the fact that like it can often be done with a stranger too, I think makes it even more enticing to like divulge in things, because I think it's like less risky in terms of like, oh, like if I divulge something that like they won't like, then I'm not losing much because I don't know this person that well, right? So yeah, I can totally see how I and other people will do that and just like completely like info dump on my entire life with someone, even though yeah, it might not be used as a way to like actually build something or like, you know, create a foundational relationship. It's just kind of like this artificial intimacy.
I have so much to say on this section. Let me just start by saying there's a particular sentence here I just want to call attention to. In the search for a unicorn, we can often overlook a lot of amazing horses. Like, yes. Like air horn snaps, like tongue click, like that is, I just imagine when you wrote it, you were like, oh, that's it for today. I can't top that. You're like, I'm going to go take a victory lap. Like that was, it was such a good line. And I think that, you know, Mackenzie and I, we just need to acknowledge that that was an excellent. And all the readers and listeners need to acknowledge, like, that was a great line. I think that that is a motto I will be internalizing.
And also, like, in the book, it's Sanjay who says that line. And I really love the character of Sanjay, even though he's slightly socially awkward. I only have love for him. So I love that he gets to say this sentence. And it's such a Sanjay thing to say as well.
Yeah, so this... I've definitely experienced this before. Like, I've heard it called like your vacay bay. Like, you're already, when you go on a vacation, and I've definitely been on solo trips before. So it's kind of even heightened that you want to create some sort of connection. And while you're traveling, just so you have some sort of like memories, and you go in with rose colored glasses, and then on the apps, you're maybe getting more attention than you normally do back home. So it's all just like, you're already so heightened and you're feeling good. And then you meet someone and then they're showing you all these cool and exciting things in the city. So the adrenaline's flowing, and then you have this like amazing night, and you just share things. Cause I mean, on one hand, cause you know that there's going to be an expiry date, and maybe I've thought of it like, it's kind of like a black hole. You're saying these things and more than likely they won't remember a lot of the details anyways, but you've got it out there, and even for a short amount of time. And you talk about it, the intimacy paradox, where, you know, they're acknowledging it, or they might validate you, or, you know, maybe give you good advice. It's definitely like Mackenzie had said, it wasn't something that they thought of a lot about, but once you like put it into words, I was like, oh, I've experienced this before. And I agree. I'm definitely going to take away that sentence, like I said earlier, and this concept of intimacy paradox.
Yeah. And like, just to bring it home, like at the end of the paragraph, you kind of round up that metaphor by saying, find yourself a good horse and stick with it. Unicorns, they're too much trouble anyway. And that also like resonated with me, because I think like I've often found myself in relationships with people or being attracted to people who I think like are very much like glittery on the outside and like appeal to me on like a superficial level, but then getting to know them and how we interact, I feel like less and less secure about it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what am I getting myself involved with?
Yeah, well, I mean, the reality is that unicorns, they don't exist. So if you think you found one, then you're not seeing the whole portrait, right? Okay. So it's in a way, it could be a little bit insulting. I'm thinking of my partner listening to this and being like, so I'm a horse to you and I'm not a unicorn.
You know what? They could be a thoroughbred. They could be a stallion. Those horses are worth millions of dollars. So that's actually
and they exist
as opposed
to unicorns. Right. Yeah.
People have whole events to go watch horses.
Vincent, you have found yourself a good horse. Yeah. Do not let that man go.
It feels a little bit bland, though, to say like everybody wants a unicorn, but it is like when you do find a unicorn, when you look under the coat of glitter and paint, often it's not as glamorous as you thought. And we all have our unicorns. They look slightly differently for everyone, but those people who like push all of our buttons or make us like really excited and we think this is what love is. And in a way, we relate to them because of some stuff in our past or some parts of our personality. But it's rare that they make for the most compelling partner, at least to us, right? Like they can be a really good partner for someone else. It's just that for me, if they're pushing all of those buttons, it's because there's something that I need to be like, oh, actually, when somebody makes me feel that way, it's normally a red flag and I need to like slow down and look at it. And like I said, with the intimacy paradox is that I think most people need to then stop looking for that feeling, because that feeling is the intimacy paradox. And how else can I feel in a relationship that actually makes me feel good and grounded and secured and loved and all of those things that are much more interesting than glitter and unrealistic animals, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it also goes back to like the earlier chapter of like wanting more and feeling like the grass is greener on the other side. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like I've poisoned quite a few relationships by having this feeling that like I'm, you know, I feel like I'm settling for a horse when there are so many unicorns out there. But yeah, now I'm just realizing, well, not just now, but like in recent years, I'm realizing that like horses are great too. You know?
They are.
There are only horses. Yes, <I'm kidding. laughs> there are no unicorns.
There are no unicorns. We've been through this, Mackenzie. Only horses.
And you found good horses, you know?
And two beautiful horses.
And now you have to grant a carriage. Anyways, this analogy is like this analogy is going out of control. But it honestly, like, it just reminded me of, okay, this may not be in the podcast, but I have a photo of, I took a picture with some unicorns and it was so sad when you got up close because it was like a paper horn that was like drooping by the end of the night. And they had painted their manes and like the color was running. So this is like perfect analogy.
Exquisite.
yeah they did a very poor job wherever you were, like it was
a straight club. It was I'll tell you the story when I see you in person. Theme was Fantasyland.
Oh my gosh.
So it's funny because we've been talking now for a long time and it feels like we've only like touched the top of the iceberg of how sex and loneliness could be related in the queer community. Do you have anything else that you want to add about sex and loneliness?
I think the only thing that I want to add, I guess, and touch on is coming back to the idea that social capital and like how I mentioned that like I intertwined my social life with sexuality. I think I just want to say like that I feel for people who either are not perceived as typically desirable or who have no desire to engage in sexual activity. Because yeah, I think it is kind of like the key to this gate for a lot of social circles and events is this idea of being like sexually desirable. And like, even if there is no chance of this person like having sex with people, that like, if they're perceived as desirable, then like, they're more likely to be invited to things because people like to be seen with other desirable people, right? Like, so yeah, I don't know. I think it's just something that I have been reflecting on throughout this session, and how I should open my horizon, not just in who I perceive as desirable, but also in who I interact with, whether or not they are desirable in my eyes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Sexual capital is so like important in the gay scene in a sort of like awfully toxic way. And like, I just think of like Pride or just a regular, like going to a pit bull or a circuit party that we have here. And there's just so many people and so many gay men that it would feel so easy to become invisible if my sexual capital is not high enough. And a lot of what I hear is that gay men are fake, or gay men events are fake or feel fake. Like, a lot of people feel this way about the gay community, or the gay scene, I should say, instead. And I think some of this fakeness stems from everyone at the party being afraid that it's going to be them, that it's going to be invisible. And so like trying extra hard to not be the invisible person of the party, instead of like being themselves, or instead of just like, yeah, maybe tonight I am invisible, but that's fine. I'm here with my friends. And I don't have a perfect solution for how we could fix that. But I think some of that, you know, the gay scene keeps being called fake or loud. And I think a lot of this comes from just people with insecurities trying to not face those insecurities, or trying to just trying to stand out, or trying to not be erased because they're like 25 hottest men to their right. So yeah, I don't know. I have feelings right now. So I'll let Dale talk, because it seems like you want to say something.
Yeah. I mean, for me, what I'm taking away is, I mean, this goes with a lot of chapters, is just mindfulness, understanding myself, understanding my motivations for why I'm doing it. And again, sort of like, is this something that I need right now? Which gas tank I'm filling up, those kinds of things. But just to touch on what you just said, I mean, I do have a lot of compassion for people who, and you use the word like feel invisible. That's an awful feeling. Like, if you've come out and maybe you fought hard to be out, and then you are ready to engage with the queer community, and then you feel invisible in the community itself, you know, it's hard and it's going to take time. And it's just, I just think it just boils down to, let's just be like kinder to each other. And maybe, you know, how you treat people, or how you maybe form maybe friendships with people, or other types of relationships, doesn't necessarily need to be on people's attractiveness or perceived attractiveness or sexual capital. And it's easier said than done. I know I'm, you know, I wish I could be like, I'm gonna be making the most objective, compassionate decisions from here on out. But, you know, and sometimes I might fail at that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's an easy solution, kind of, but instead of like forcing yourself to be loud or be someone you're not, like, find who you are and, you know, develop your assertiveness and work on your self-esteem. And these things are going to make you less invisible in their own way, maybe more than other factors. But of course, like, this is the work of a lifetime, and it's really easy for me to be sitting here with a podcast and telling you what to do. And I agree with you, Dale, that like, what I get from this chapter is mostly the first part, like the role of sex, and just examining like, what is it that makes me want to have sex, and what kind of sex do I want to have? What are my sexual desires? What turns me on? What does not turn me on? What turns me on at time and not at other time? And what's the difference between the two? And looking at all of this without judgment, it's often the job that I do as a psychotherapist who works with sexuality, is just to like offer a non-judgmental space and a stigma-free space to explore all of those things. There is so much stigma around sex. And sometimes for people just to hear like, okay, yeah, it seems like, I don't know, it seems like what you like sexually is to go to the bathhouse and have sex with six strangers in one night and not have sex for a month and a half. Now that we know that about you, how can you do that in the most like respectful way for yourself? And how can you do that successfully? Like if we remove the stigma, then it's like, how do we find solutions for you to get what you want and enjoy it?
I love that.
So that's our talk about sex and loneliness and the end of today's episode. And you will have to wait 2 more weeks to hear us talking because I need to edit this podcast. Dale McKenzie and I are just going to take a quick break and we will record episode 10, 11, if we count the intro of season 4 of Mental Health Much.